Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Everybody, and we welcome you in to another edition of Inside Boxing Live. As always, your host, Dan Canobbio, navigating you through the wild and wonderful sport that we call boxing. We are now in the latter stages of March, getting closer and closer to the best month of boxing that we've seen in a long time. That is April. But this is how the boxing world works. You know, you look at the schedule and you say, all right, this weekend, you know, not that many good fights. We'll see how it plays out. You know, and if you listen to this show right here, I told you that Mick Conlon versus Lee Wood was going to be one of the 10 best fights of the spring. Didn't know it was going to be end up being one of the 10 best fights in the history of boxing, or one of the 10 best fights in the last 10 years. Maybe the history of boxing is overstating a little bit, but that's how I felt after I watched that fight. Plan on talking about that. That was the big fight this past weekend. Lee Wood, Hail Mary punch, knocking Mick Conlon out, knocking him out of the ring to retain his WBA featherweight title. That was a big fight this past weekend over on DAZN. We have some big fights being announced. We have some big fights coming up this weekend. Our guest this week on Inside Boxing Live is Showtime Sports president Steven Espinosa. I've been trying to get Steven on the show for a long time, and it just happens to coincide with their big rollout that they put together this week with Showtime Boxing. Some good fights on the schedule. A lot of them we kind of knew about already. They've been leaked out, whether it's from some Coppinger or Jake Donovan or Keith Idick. Go up and down, whoever your favorite media member is. They leaked out some of these fights, but they were made official. There was a few surprises on the schedule, but for the most part, we knew about that. So we'll talk about the upcoming schedule with Steven Espinosa. We'll talk about his Twitter game, because as you know, if you follow Steven Espinosa on Twitter, he lets it fly. You know, he's like one of us on Twitter. He's not afraid to mix it up over on the good old Bird app. So we'll get into that. We'll get into Jake Paul's contract status. And just a really fun behind the scenes look, you know, like what goes on with Al Haymon? How does it work? You know, how does it work buying fights? How does it work when Al Haymon pitches a fight to Espinosa? Does he always like it? Does he always go in lockstep with Haymon? Do they butt heads? I think that was a really fun part of the interview with Steven Espinosa. So a really fun one this week. Got a great week of boxing coming up. We got Virgil Ortiz returns. Action against Michael McKinson. That should promises to be a good one. Obviously, Virgil Ortiz, one of the best young welterweights in boxing right now, climbing the rankings in the WBO. Eventually, he's going to have to see Terrence Crawford. Eventually, he's going to have to see some of these champs at 147. Will he expect Virgil Ortiz to win this fight? Michael McKinson, not really known as a puncher, not really known at all, to be honest. He's coming over from Matchroom, his first fight in the U.S., and he's taking on a guy in Virgil Ortiz who seems to be getting better every single time he steps into the ring. So that should be some real firepower. Then also here in New York City, or as I record this show, going to be heading over to Madison Square Garden this weekend for a top rank card headlined by Edgar Berlanga taking on Steve Rolls. It's Edgar Berlanga's first fight since he went the distance. Also his first fight since his bicep injury. So he's fully healed, or maybe it was a shoulder injury. It was an arm injury for Berlanga. So he's back headlining. The card was supposed to have Keyshawn Davis on it as well. He has an undisclosed illness. He's out. Xander Zayas is in. Bruce Carrington is in. There's some big names. I expect it to be buzzing over at the Hulu Theater, the theater inside MSG. Going to be a lot of Puerto Rican fans for Zayas and Berlanga. It is a bummer that we're not going to see Keyshawn Davis up close, but he's going to be back. He'll be back next month, I bet, on a card for top rank. So those are the big shows this weekend. Also, we got a Probellum card. We've seen Sonny Edwards in action. We're going to see Regis Progray in action. The catchweight king is actually fighting at 140 pounds. Last week was a heavy show on the 140 pound division. some great feedback there on my mythical tournament. I had Regis Parker in the finals of this mythical tournament going up against Teofimo Lopez. He's fighting Tyrone McKenna this weekend over on ProBellum. And I went in depth with this last week. I'm happy for Regis that he's getting these paydays. He made close to $1 million to fight Red Catch last April. He's making a pretty penny to fight on this ProBellum card in Dubai. But when it comes down to it, he's 33 years old. So is he going to go for it? Is he going to go for a title shot? Is he going to try to get one of these four belts that Josh Taylor is probably going to relinquish? I'm interested to see where Regis Progre's career goes because it's been puzzling, to say the least. He's getting the bag. He's getting a lot of money. That's great. But he's not exactly fighting top guys in his career, I would say, has stalled since that very, very close loss to Josh Taylor. So that's the fight, upcoming fight weekend. Get to the Showtime rollout here. We know about most of these fights. Tim Zhu versus Terrell Gaucher. That's coming up March 26th. We got Lubin versus Fandora, which is that April 9th stacked day. Ryan Garcia versus Togo. Lubin versus Fandora. There's so many fights that day. Triple G versus Murata. There's also an ESPN card too, headlined by Michaela Mayer and Jennifer Han. Spence versus Ugas. We know about that fight for a long time. That's a pay-per-view. But one of the interesting things about that fight on April 16th, Spence versus Ugas, is that Stanonias versus Buteyev is going to be the main event of the prelims, which are going to air on Showtime before the pay-per-view. See, I had thought that Buteyev Stanionis was going to be the co-main event for Spence Ugas. That's coming. So you got an all-day buffet on April 16th. And then Charlo Castaño, and then Boots versus Castillo Clayton is the co-main event for Charlo Castaño. That right there has, you're getting some bang for your buck there, and it's not on pay-per-view. You know, Charlo versus Castaño is on regular Showtime. Castillo Clayton versus Boots Ennis, also regular Showtime. Love that. Benavidez versus Lemieux. It's whatever. Lemieux hits hard, so we'll see. Maybe he can push Benavidez, but we want to see Benavidez in bigger fights. We want to see Benavidez versus Plant. Tank versus Rolly Romero. You know my stance on this. Very indifferent. I want to see what Tank does next. What is Tank going to do in his December fight? This Romero fight is easy money for him. It's going to be at the Barclays Center. I'm excited about that as a New Yorker, but a lot of fans don't care where the fight is. They just are upset that it's on a pay-per-view. Stephen Fulton versus Daniel Roman is the one fight that didn't leak out. There were some rumblings. Love this. I love that Showtime is dedicated to divisions. 154 division, the 122-pound division has been pretty much owned by Showtime. So we're going to see Stephen Fulton defend his title against Daniel Roman, who almost should be a champion. Close fight to MJ Akpadaliev. So we're going to see Fulton versus Roman. And then, of course, the last one. Oof, man, guy, I brought this up to Espinosa. I said, flat out, this isn't a good fight. Jamal Charlo versus MJ versus Sulecki. It's tough. Jamal Charlo has exactly two fights since his win over Derevchenko, the best win of his career, I thought, which was in October of 2020. Since then, he fought in June last year against Juan Macias Montiel. Didn't look good. And now 1 year later, June 18th. I love that he's fighting on Juneteenth. It's going to be a raucous crowd. That's great. But we wanted to see him in there versus Munguia. I will talk to Stephen Espinosa about that today. I talked about how, we're living in this era where we have four different networks. We essentially have four different leagues. It's great for fans. We get to watch fight cards around the clock. We get to watch streams from obscure countries. We get to see a top-ranked card on ESPN and a Showtime card, a PBC card, and a DAZN streaming and all that. It's great. That's awesome for us fans. But it rears its ugly head now with this Munguia and Charlo fight breaking down. If you don't know, the fighters agreed. Munguia and Charlo agreed to fight. Showtime was paying the freight of this fight, so they wanted it on Showtime. Very standard practice. Golden Boy or Zanfer Promotions, as Munguia has two promoters. He has a lot of managers. They got in the way. They wanted DAZN to be a part of it. They wanted it to be a joint pay-per-view. So that's interesting to me. DAZN, who made a whole marketing scheme on not being a pay-per-view, wanted a fight to be on pay-per-view, and Showtime, which is a traditional pay-per-view outlet, did not wanted to be on regular TV. You got all that? So that's the biggest news of the week, is that fight falling apart, but it can be revisited. That's something we're going to talk about with Stephen Espinosa. So a lot of things going on in the boxing world. I think you really enjoyed this interview. So without further ado, here he is, Showtime Sports President, Stephen Espinosa. All right, let's bring in our guest this week here on Inside Boxing Live. If you're a boxing fan, you know the name, you know the voice, Steven Espinoza, the president of Showtime Sports. Showtime just rolled out their spring / early summer schedule. Some bangers in there, some really good fights. We'll get to that and so much more. But Steven, I appreciate you taking some time to come on. I see the Freedom Tower in the background. Love that shot. Looks great. How's everything going?
It's great. Great. Pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, it's a nice sunny day in New York. The boxing schedule is heating up. The weather is heating up in New York. As we know, March isn't the biggest month for boxing because of, March Madness. And I know you likened that rollout to a Selection Sunday, which you kind of did get that vibe a little bit. I had my bracket out going through that. But, boxing schedule heating up. Showtime schedule, I think, is a great complement to what is already a really good boxing schedule. I think that you can make the point that, all schedules need to be strong. It's a good for the sport. It's not just one against the other, all those different platforms. I think if everyone puts out their best product, we're going to get the best overall product, which is ultimately good for the consumer, right?
Yeah. And I think part of it as well is, I'm saying this really for the good of the sport, not to sort of self-congratulate. I really wish like more networks, more promoters would do the work to set, to go a little bit further in the future. I know as well as anybody, I'm well aware it's a pain. It is incredibly time consuming and inevitably stuff leaks out. So it never stays a complete secret. But the reality is, I think there's a lot of benefit, chiefly sort of the visibility into the sport and a feeling of organization and cohesiveness. And the fact that this isn't just a random collection of fights that pop up once or twice a month, that there's actually, this is a sport. It is organized. These fights do relate to each other, and we should give people some visibility and predictability here.
Absolutely. Put it all in one place. Get everyone see it. I put the schedule out every once in a while, get fans excited on Twitter, get so many hits because fans just want to see it all in one place. There's a lot going on in the sports world, a lot going on in the world. So if you can condense it, you do a rollout. One of the coolest events I've been to in recent was in 2018, when you guys had your big rollout in New York City, a big red carpet event. We had food, we had all the fighters in one place. Obviously, that's harder to do with COVID. And I thought it was super impressive. Think about it, getting all those fighters in one room. I was in awe of that.
Somebody circulated the picture again this past week when we announced it. And it was the first time I looked at it. And I thought, that is an impressive, not just getting all those fighters there with their belts, dressed up. It was an impressive collection of really the best of the sport.
And who can forget, that was the infamous Caleb from Barstool was going around. He was asking. I was set up next to him, Steven. So, he asked Wilder, like, who are you? And Wilder was so angry. And then he went, all these fighters were going from Caleb, who does phenomenal stuff for Barstool. They were going from Caleb to me. And they were just so angry coming to me. So they were either just still angry or they were just very willing to be asked like a normal boxing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but right. that was a good event. But the Showtime rollout, we just had it. We got 9 marquee events, 21 undefeated fighters, 2 world championship unification bouts, 7 world championship matches. It starts March 26th with Tim Zhu and Terrell Gaucher. We got Erickson Lubin on the card. That's going to be a banger. Obviously, we love the big ones. We love the Spences. We love the Ugases. We love Tank Davis. I get excited for those Lubin versus Fundoras or the Stephen Fulton Juniors versus Danny Roman, which, as you just talked about, fights that did leak out. That was one that didn't really trickle out. But overall, great rollout. Your thoughts on all that and some of the fights that you're looking forward to? Because I know you're a fight fan.
Yeah, I mean, the reality, we were trying to do 3 things here. Number one was roll out a consistent schedule of high quality, even matchups among top tier fighters. Mm-hmm. Not just big names, not just 50-50 fights, but 50-50 fights from elite fighters. That's one element. The other element is, or the second element is, trying to provide quality throughout the card. And that means, you're not going to have huge names opening the card, but good matchups and meaningful fights.
Yeah. And, I mean, okay, sorry.
Yeah. And then the third thing is, you know, really, and this is, I think, one of the things that's almost unique to boxing fans. Boxing fans love discovering the next guy or the next, mm-hmm. next. So looking in bringing in the Yoelvis Gomez, you know, types, you know, the Kevin Salgados, the Elvis Rodriguezes, who may not be household names in every boxing household, but, you know, this is a preview of some talented young guys who may become something in the future.
Yeah, you shine that light on them, whether it's with Showbox and getting them up the ranks. And I know Boots Ennis is like no longer that name, but he's almost like the hardcore fan knows him. I had Dame Lillard on the show and that was his guy. I'm like, he says he likes boxing because he likes to find the next up and coming star. Boots Ennis, I would say still in that, like maybe on the fringe of becoming like a future champ, still kind of unknown, but he is going to be part of the Showtime family for even longer now. That's exciting. You know, when he fights Castillo Clayton, I believe that is May 14th, correct?
That's right. That's, you know, that's almost undoubtedly, even though we don't have the schedule, obviously, for the second half of the year. It's going to be really hard, probably impossible to top the May 14th card for a Showtime fight. Yeah. With an undisputed 154-pound title fight, the rematch of Jermell Charlo and Castaño, and then the co-feature with Boots Ennis in Castillo Clayton. That's, you know, whatever the third fight is going to be, and we'll work on it. That right there, that's our best card of the year on Showtime.
Yeah, it is. That's a really, really good card. Castillo Clayton can fight. I covered a bunch of his fights on the Broadway boxing circuit. He can fight. He was a guy who was highly ranked. I think he's a good litmus test. I thought he, you know, could have beaten Sergey Lipinets. I mean, you saw what Boots did to Lipinets. And yeah, I like that card. Obviously, Charlo and Castaño. That was one of my top three best or favorite fights of 2021. Just I love the fights where it's volume, which is Castaño throws 90 punches around, versus power. And yeah. Charlo throws the least punches around at 154. Obviously, I'm a stats guy, but I love stuff like that. So to run that back and for it to be on regular Showtime in this, I know I got a lot of questions from fans. We'll get to those in a little bit on what goes on pay-per-view. Now the Zone's rolling out pay-per-view. This Fox seems hell-bent on pay-per-views. The fact that a lot of these fights are going to be on regular Showtime is a big plus.
Yeah, you know, that's it. And look, there are certain realities. We don't really have an incentive. You know, there's not a pot of gold in the rainbow for us as the network on pay-per-view. You know, our bread and butter, our business is the Showtime subscription. So our incentive to put as much on Showtime as we can, that's not always possible, just given the financial realities of what it takes to make some fights happen. Some fights are not going to happen without the money from pay-per-view, but where at all possible, we try to put everything on Showtime as much as we can.
Now, there was one part of the Zoom rollout that I missed. There's going to be I think it's the first that Showtime's doing this in a while, or maybe ever, is putting some fights on Showtime before a pay-per-view. Can you fill me in on that?
Yeah, I don't recall that we've done that. We've certainly done some streaming undercard fights. We've done Extreme at times. This one was sort of, we have an embarrassment of riches. You know, we had, I don't even want to call them sort of, you know, prelim fights or undercard fights, because, you know, that two fight card, the two fights that we announced there, Budiev and Stanionis and Brandon Lee, Zach Ochoa, that's a Saturday night championship card.
Damn right.
That is, and that we're going to get, you know, that two fight card along with the pay-per-view preview leading into the pay-per-view.
Wow.
So call it like, you know, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, a really good two fight card on Showtime and on other platforms. And it's simply because we have, you know, those fights deserve to be on TV. Those aren't prelim fights. Those aren't undercard fights. Those are just high quality fights and high quality fighters.
It's the pregame. It's the pregame show. It's like in college, you pregame before you go out. You pregame with two really good fights. One of them, you know, that Stanonius one in Butiev has a lot of implications too. And of course, the other as well. I mean, that's really good stuff. But, you know, let's get into the fun questions.
Yeah, let's go there. I saw your social media. I'm ready for the tough questions.
We'll get to the fan questions. I know you love social media. I know you're one of the rare executives that's you're in the trenches. You're on social media. I want to know what your drafts look like. I see what you send out. What do the drafts look like?
The drafts are a lot more interesting. It depends on my particular mood. Sometimes there's some ones that go out that probably should have stayed in drafts. Yeah. But the ones that actually stay in drafts, you know, those ones are fire.
I go through my drafts and I'm like, what was I thinking here? Thank God I didn't send that out. You don't want to piss off too many. You got to walk, especially me. I'm like independent media. I got to walk a tightrope. Right. I want to keep everyone happy. I want to keep every promoter happy. I want to keep every network happy. I want to keep the fans happy, which is, you know, they already made their mind up on me and where I stand, which is hilarious. But I mean, we'll get to the fan questions, but I have a question here. Obviously you read the tea leaves here. Fox is going heavy towards pay-per-view. They're doing less and less of these fight nights, which they originally intended to do when they teamed up with the PBC, I believe in late 2018. You're talking about putting fights on before pay-per-views. Obviously Showtime is a sister network of CBS. Can we potentially see CBS pick up some of the slack here? Is there any discussions with that? What's the latest with maybe seeing some? Because there's only so many dates that Showtime could have.
Yeah, that's very true. And part of the challenge there is, CBS as the most watched network has a lot of, a really busy, sports schedule and really valuable primetime schedule. So those spots are really at a premium. Mm-hmm. It's tough for me to go to them and be able to say, look, let's put this on CBS unless it's something, really, really high quality, really, really valuable, because regardless, no matter what time slot it is, it's going to be displacing something which is really valuable to CBS network. So, I think there are ways around it. There's certainly a lot of platforms between CBS Sports Network and Paramount Plus and Showtime Streaming and Showtime. So, the good thing is there's been no shortage of support from CBS, whether it's, in NFL, saw a lot of that for the Canelo fight. We've seen a lot of marketing support across the company. So, whether or not we put fights on CBS and how frequently we do so, we will get a lot of support from the corporation across all of Viacom.
Okay, so there has been thoughts of it. I mean,
sure.
Okay, that's good. I think fans, they want to know. They want to know what's next. They kind of see, like I said, read the tea leaves, see what's going on with Fox and who can pick up the slack in this PBC, umbrella, because there's a lot of fighters. There's a lot of fighters on that umbrella. I know Al Heyman he's never had a problem finding a network. How about a question? There's a good jumping off point. How much do you interact with Al Heyman? Give us a fun fact on Al Heyman. I met him once and it was like I saw Bigfoot.
look, people, multiple times a day is the short answer, multiple calls a day, especially in a process like this. I made the analogy during the stream to setting up the NCAA tournament bracket. And I was half joking, but it's a little bit like that. It's a lot of mix and match of this fighter and that fighter and this date and, this venue and, that fighter, isn't available. This venue isn't available. So it is a really time consuming process, which, some days we're talking probably 10 or 12 times a day.
Wow.
But he grew up in a, grew up sort of business wise in the music business. And I think a lot of people are, maybe a lot, there's a certain segment of the boxing that is suspicious of him because he isn't front and center and he doesn't do interviews and he doesn't speak regularly. And that is nothing other than sort of how he was sort of indoctrinated into the industry by his own mentors. And in the music industry, he's explained to me, look, the promoter, the representative, the manager, they're never the story. They never should be the story, because every drop of ink that is written about a manager or a promoter or an advisor is ink that could have gone to the artist. So it's an old school, it's a refreshing attitude. And he's saying, like, look, don't write about me. Don't talk about me. Talk about the fighters. Those are the guys you should be focusing on.
Yeah, for sure. And there are pros and cons to not being in the forefront and not, you know, staying in the back. There are a lot of promoters that like to be all up in the videos, like to quote a famous moment. It's interesting. I get asked about him a lot, Al Heyman, mm-hmm. and he's an interesting character. I would love to listen to some of those conversations, man. 12 conversations a day. I mean, I'm curious about that. I think fans are too. It's like, you know, he has, it's almost like this baseball. I'm a big baseball fan, like this baseball, you know, the lockout we just witnessed, like the commissioner works for the owners, the players, Tony Clark, the head of the MLBPA works for the players. Like you represent Showtime, you know, Al represents his fighters. So I'm sure like every conversation isn't, you know, peaches and cream. I'm sure there's a little bit of pushback. Like, hey, we want better matchups. We want this guy to fight this guy. I know because you have to, you know, for your audience.
Right? Absolutely. You know, and there've been times they've been servicing multiple networks. You know, we want all the good fights. Other networks want, you know, good fights too. Mm-hmm. So whether it's, you know, specific fighters or, you know, there is like in any business relationship, there's a back and forth. Yeah. And there are objectives. There are things that he wants to get done. There are things that I want to get done. A lot of times those are the same things, but often they're not.
Yeah. That's interesting. That's a nice way to put it. But I'm sure there were a lot of conversations. Wow. About this Charlo Munguia. I would label it as a debacle. I would label it as for you, it is probably gave some late nights, but you know, I'll try to keep it real. Like I was a little disappointed to see Charlo and Sulecki. I don't think it could end up being a great fight. I mean, that's why they fight the fights. I think we've learned that. But you know, to go from, oh wow, we're gonna get Charlo Munguia, that's a can't miss fight, or maybe Charlo versus you know, an Adames, or Charlo versus a Lara. How did it settle on Sulecki?
Well, you know, the reality is it's trying to get the best available fight that we can, you know, and for Jamal, there's the waiting game and, you know, wanted to be in the, you know, in the Canelo discussions, and he certainly was. And then Canelo went a different way. And then it seemed like we were able to come in with a good save on Munguia. And then, you know, the question then, as soon as it became apparent that Munguia was looking like it was a remote possibility, then you literally take out the top 10 rankings. You know, I like to look at Transnational Boxing Ratings Board.
Yeah, they're good.
You know, just because, you know, it's sort of the power, the wisdom of the crowd, so mm-hmm. to speak, you know, and, you know, and looking there and saying, okay, well, let's see, this is the consensus on, you know, top 10 fighters, who else on this list is available and willing to take the fight. You know, and Sulecki, admittedly isn't the sexiest name, you know, but he's a solid, solid veteran, having gone, you know, the distance, you know, distance with the best in the division mm-hmm. Already. So I think he is, you know, is it going to generate as much excitement as some of the other ones? You know, probably not. Is it a perfectly credible fight and in a good matchup against of, you know, one of the top guys in the division versus another top, you know, probably 7 or 8 guy in the division? You know, that's exactly what it is. So I get it. Fans were very excited about either Canelo or Munguia. But objectively, that's a good, credible fight for him.
I do feel for Jamal. I do. You know, when it came out that Munguia and Jamal both agreed to terms, and I'm glad you pointed that out on the Zoom call, and I'm glad that leaked out too, is because it's very rarely the fighters that don't want to fight. You know, they're not ducking. These guys fight for a living. They want the smoke, especially Jamal Charlo, a guy who's in his, you know, early 30s, you know, going from almost getting a Canelo fight. So let me go for my second best option is Munguia. So hopefully that can be reconsidered. Hopefully that can be revisited, I should say. For the second half of 2021. But, you know, was Lara floated? Was Adames floated? Those are a lot of the names that were being pushed to me on social media.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't, you know, Lara, not really, to be completely honest. You know, that was not a name that came up. You know, he's a lesser active guy, you know, still a really skilled guy, but that was not someone who came up. Mm-hmm. Adames was, you know, was a possibility, you know, and there's some question about his, you know, what timetable he would be ready on, among other things. And, you know, at a certain point, you know, you just sort of, you go into, you know, this has been such sort of a painful process, that, you know, we wanted something, you know, to lock something in and be able to announce it. So yeah. That was the quickest, most credible fight that we could make. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've known, I've said it publicly many times, I'm not a huge fan about talking about negotiations and giving minute day by day, you know, and saying, look, you know, tomorrow this or next week that, or, you know, we'll work on this. I think this was an exception, you know, for one specific reason. You know, Charlo is, and both Charlos are polarizing characters. They're, you know, very talented fighters. They're big personalities, and they generate a fair amount of criticism, you know, a fair amount of support as well. But, you know, they have strong reactions. And I think sometimes, you know, fans are see a fight and it's not the one that they wanted. And they assume that nothing's happening behind the scenes to make those things happen. Right. Here, you literally could not have asked, you know, Charlo and TGB and PBC to have done anything more than what they did. You know, they chased, you know, one of the best guys, if not the best guy in the sport, didn't go their way. Then they went to, you know, another top five guy in their, you know, in the division. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really felt like we all bent over backwards. It was a very generous offer. It would have been, you know, I believe that Munguia would have made a multiple of the highest purse that he had made before, and he would have gotten a full world title shot.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we did everything right. We even, you know, came up with a solution for the competing platforms and, you know, yeah, a situation where, you know, in a second fight, you know, that could go to the platform of Munguia's choice. Mm-hmm. But it just, it wasn't enough. So, you know, I think, you know, all in all, I'm completely happy with Sulek. You know, we did everything we can to get guys who are higher up in the rankings, mm-hmm. But it didn't happen, you know, and he's solidly a top 10 guy in the division. I think we'll give him a good, credible fight. I mean, he's a guy who has only got two losses, both by decision, one to Jacobs, one to Andre. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's a good, credible, solid resume.
Yeah, well, if it means anything, the court of public opinion certainly has taken one side, and that's it's your guy's side. And, you know, stuff is leaking out, and it's no secret that Jaime Munguia has a lot of cooks in the kitchen when it comes to decision makers. And well, it's the one thing I always say. It's like, I think we're living in the golden era of watching fights. We have so much access. We got four different platforms. We got fights streamed, great streams that you could, that are, you know, that you have to pay for around the world. But sometimes those, you know, exclusivity, these networks are tied to fighters. It's a gift and a curse, and it reared its ugly head this time. And I think fans will know that Showtime and TGB, like you said, and Jamal tried. They tried very, mm-hmm. very hard. And it could be, a fight that we can see in the second half. All right, let's get to the fan questions. Fun stuff. Jimmy Our Thing, one of my favorite followers on Twitter, was Mayweather signing for you with Showtime the single most satisfying moment of your career?
It was certainly up there. I would say, probably not surprisingly, actually seeing Mayweather Pacquiao come to fruition, mm-hmm. itself, because that was one that, you know, through my career, I was involved with in all the various iterations. When I was outside counsel to Golden Boy in the original Top Rank negotiations way back in 2008, 2009, you know, drafting the term sheet, you know, and being in the middle of that negotiation and knowing how close we came in 2009 to that happening. And then, you know, getting to, you know, making a career transition and then being able to be part of bringing that to fruition, you know, years later in 2015. I think just because as a fan, you know, I was being tortured like everyone else was being tortured. Yeah. But professionally, you know, I spent a lot of time on it, you know, and come close on multiple times. So to finally bring it home, I'd say that was the most satisfying thing.
Yeah, that was cool. That was a big moment. I mean, you know, Showtime has a long history of these superstars coming over to Showtime, you know, at the second half of their career, whether it was Tyson, Holyfield, And Mayweather was another one. I think it was, what, 2013 he made that jump? I think it was after the Cotto fight.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Cotto fight was the last one.
Yeah, and there was it was tremendously satisfying because, if you remember, in retrospect, everyone was like, oh, yeah, obvious thing, obviously a great thing for the network. That was not sort of the reaction at the time that we signed the deal. There was a lot of negativity.
Yeah.
There was a lot of criticism and saying, look, what the hell is Showtime doing this for? This is silly. He's not going to fight that often. He doesn't mm-hmm. have much left in the tank. This is desperation. This is not going to end well. Yeah. Could not have worked out better for him.
I would say so. Yeah, he went on quite a run after those two Maidana fights. I mean, we're epic. And then obviously McGregor. Jeez, talk about another one. Let's go to at Homer, another one of my favorite follows. I don't know how he has this handle. It's just Homer. How does someone make a transition from law practice into boxing or the TV space, or any advice for someone currently outside the boxing business interested in getting involved?
Look, for me, the transition was sort of being tangentially involved. The advice I would say, and it would sort of was not that I was looking to transition over to boxing, but the lessons I take away from it is, if you're not exactly where you want to be, I think your job is to use your current situation and your current opportunities to the biggest extent that you can to get where you want to be. So I'm an entertainment attorney, and most of my work was film and TV, actors, writers, directors. But I had, again, through happenstance, I was representing both De La Hoya and Tyson as their lawyers. And it put me in a position to, because I knew the TV business and I knew the boxing business, thankfully there were some creative people at Showtime who were willing to take a risk on someone who had never worked at a TV network before.
Yeah.
But it was because I had utilized the opportunities I had to sort of be able to make a case for different opportunities. So it's sort of like, no, I'm not a sports attorney. No, I'm not a TV programmer, but I have exposed myself to the boxing business. I've exposed myself to the business of cable television. And then when I get into the room with someone, I can at least make a pitch and say, look, I haven't done exactly this, but look at all this other stuff I've done, which has prepared me to do this.
How long have you been at Showtime? Is it over 10 years?
It's almost exactly. I just passed my 10-year anniversary. Wow. It was 10 years in November.
Congrats. It's almost flew by. I feel like everything is just kind of flying by. But yeah, I that was a big shakeup when that headline came through. And must be interesting to be Oscar's former lawyer. And now, for instance, this Munguia thing, that's got to be a nice little added wrinkle, right?
Yeah, it's the business is incestuous. Like, people move to different sides it's a small business. So look, I have nothing respect for those guys. What Oscar and Richard and Eric and others built with Golden Boy was really incredible to watch.
Yeah, I like Golden Boy. They put good fights together and for the whole. I mean, they do a good job with that. AFC Steven says, what do you think of Conor McGregor these days, your buddy? Can you go one day without?
Oh him? God, you're just
connected to him.
They're just looking. They're just fishing for. He is a tremendous personality. Yes. And I'll leave it there because. The reality, look, okay, I'll take the bait.
There we go.
There's a narrative. Look, one thing that UFC does better than boxing is they have one cohesive messaging, because they have one large group. So mm-hmm. there's the same message from the same people all the time. And their narrative is, okay, you always get the best fighting the best. That's not true.
Do they though?
Yeah. That's, if you're paying attention and thinking critically and rationally, no. It's not the best fighting the best. It's the best opportunity fighting the best opportunity for the UFC. So, if it was the best fighting the best, then Conor McGregor would no longer be getting title shots, because he hasn't proven to be the best and he hasn't defended his titles successfully. You know, he's not a guy who should be top of the list, but he is a guy who's top of the list in terms of salesmanship, mm-hmm. and visibility, mm-hmm. and, you know, commercial appeal to some extent. And that's why he gets the opportunities. So, you know, he's a great personality. You know, he's got some more mileage left in him, and, you know, he sells fights. But you'd be hard pressed to defend it and say, like, that he's still an elite fighter who is worthy of the opportunities at the championship level.
Yeah. What is it? One win since 2016. The way I look at the UFC, it's like, it isn't the best versus the best. And I get upset when I hear that too, but it's like, I don't follow it very closely, but what I'm seeing is recycled matchups. I'm seeing a lot of recycled Masvidal, Covington. I'm like, didn't we see that already? We didn't, but it's just so many of us, the same matchups over and over. I think they're running out of stars. I like to, kind of chide my UFC followers that follow me too. I'm like, you know, UFC wishes they had the amount of talent that was in boxing right now.
Yeah. I mean, look, Colby Covington is a really good example. You know, he was going to get cut until he came up with a gimmick. Oh, you know, the gimmick didn't make him a better fighter. Sure, he has gotten better over the years, but his fight style isn't significantly different than it was several years ago when he was on the verge of being cut. He just became more sellable. Mm-hmm. So he didn't become better. He became more sellable.
Well, the interesting thing with Covington is they said that, like, he had this whole moniker, which probably got him fights, but didn't make him any more money because they don't get upside on the pay-per-views.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I thought was interesting, but hey, it kept him from not getting cut. And
it put food on the table. So, you know, kudos to him. He figured out how the system over there works, and it works better for you if you are a big personality. It's not about talent. It's about, you know, commercial appeal. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And now that we're a couple of years removed from the McGregor Mayweather lead up, being on that stage, I mean, you're always going to be, you know, it's just always going to be a thing. It's always going to be a thing for you, but
right.
Like, you handled it well. And I think as the further and further we get away from it, it's actually like, it's gotta be funny for you, right?
It was even funny at the time. You know, look, if you know me personally, that isn't in my nature to sort of sit and take it, but you know, that was, look, I'm not trying to, you know, for me personally and professionally, like, I don't need to be a storyline more than I already was. Like, that it's a distraction. I don't need to insert myself and become a major player and become a Vince McMahon style. And that's all that would have happened.
Let me see your strut. You got the billionaire strut. That's yeah. McGregor's.
I'm not going to become, you know, Triple H. And so it was sort of like, okay, you know, weather the storm and continue to do the job. And
what a thrill, though. That was a thrill. That was a wild, wild time. I mean, we'll never forget that.
I think I can say with confidence, I don't think there's going to be another opportunity where I can walk into a stadium of 1,000 people and they're all booing me.
That's awesome.
I doubt that's going to happen again. But hey, it was good to experience.
Never say never. Jake Paul, Conor McGregor. I mean, when is it happening? Jake Paul, Conor McGregor. I get asked about it all the time. I'm the boxing guy to my friends. I'm the boxing guy here. When's Jake Paul fighting McGregor? I mean, it's Showtime pay-per-view. Let's go.
Look, McGregor, Masvidal, you know, the Diaz brothers, you know, look, those are collisions of personalities, which, you know, would be thrilling. I mean, they're interesting fights as well, but with the promotion ability of those guys, there'd be phenomenal events.
Yeah. It would be. Yeah, I noticed something. Maybe this was a slippage. Maybe it wasn't. You said during the webinar, hopefully Jake Paul is back. Does that mean just hopefully he just fights again, or hopefully he's with Showtime? What's the? I would say the contract status.
He's got plenty of opportunities. We're talking to him. Look, he's certainly going to fight again. It may be with Showtime and maybe with another platform. Look, we certainly want to continue doing business with him. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of suitors. He's got a lot of financial opportunities. You know, and look, if someone is going to come along, you know, and write a check, which is, you know, silly. Look, we've shown the ability, as painful as it is, that we're going to be disciplined about our deals, and it's got to make sense. So yeah. if people, the way that we've stayed in this business for 36 years is, you know, is knowing what our business principles are. So if people are throwing around silly money, you know, we don't need to match that. Now, I'm not saying that's happening with Jake, or, you know, the money that Jake makes are silly, You know, that would be the circumstance in which, you know, we wouldn't continue with Jake, is if, you know, he just got an offer somewhere else that didn't make sense for us to match.
Oh, so he's not like contractually obligated?
Correct.
Okay, that's cool. I mean, we've seen so many of these apps and stuff come out of nowhere. I feel like boxing fans are like, whether it's Famio or like some of like these ones that are just like, where are these coming from? I mean, there's so many over the years. So I would not be surprised if Jake Paul got thrown in the ridiculous bag to fight. I thought it was a savvy move getting him on Showtime. Okay, final question. This is a fan question from me.
Okay.
Are you Javon Bay on Twitter?
No,
who is Javon Bay?
You know, look, if I had a burner account, I'd like to think that I would run it better and a little bit more suspicion free. And I certainly, if it was me, I wouldn't have the ability to sort of banter back and forth with myself the way I am with Javon. So, well, I've never met or never spoken to, by the way. But I do think that's funny. I do not have a burner account. I think anyone who's followed me for any amount of time should know that, like, I don't really need a burner account because I'm pretty candid.
Okay, so you're not Javon Bay and you don't have a burner account. Those are the two biggest snippets when I cut this interview up. That's what's going to be. I will say this about Javon Bay. The guy, whoever it is a pretty astute. They know the boxing.
Absolutely. And they're paying a lot of attention to the landscape and sort of looking strategically at what everyone's doing.
All right, Stephen, I appreciate the time. I'm looking forward to this Showtime rollout. I love Showtime. I love the whole broadcast team, everyone behind the scenes. Do a phenomenal job. And I like that Custer said, you're the friend of boxing. I really think that too. I think boxing fans, you know, we're lucky to have someone like you that's just passionate about boxing. And I look forward to seeing you at the Barclays Center.
Absolutely.
We didn't get to that. May 28th.
I mean, I appreciate the kind words. You know, that's the highest compliment that I could ever receive is for someone, you know, whether when I'm gone or when I'm still here, to say, look at it, I helped elevate the sport, because that's all I'm trying to do. And, you know, like you, I'm excited to be back at Barclays Center. Like, it's a great venue, and they bring out a great crowd.
And they bring out a lot of the weed smoke, the secondhand weed smoke in that arena.
Absolutely right.
Pungent. I'm going to have to bring like something to block. I got to count those punches. I can't be
second. Yeah, absolutely. High. And now we're on the verge of legalized cannabis. You know, it's going to be even more.
We've seen Al get weed smoke blown in his face last year, Al Bernstein, from Pete Davidson, which I can't even believe that's actually a sentence. So we need to keep the THC fumes away from Al. So we can, maybe Mora. He might be into that. DJ Mora back in the day. But I appreciate the time, Mr. Espinosa, and big time boxing coming your way on Showtime. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it.